So a lot of people ask me all the time, how is it that you do what you do being in your 40s? Well, it's a lot of hard work, but honestly, I got a lot of help. I've been going to Triple Threat Performance for my physical therapy needs for a few years now. I keep tearing this body down and they keep putting me back together again. And just recently, I joined their strength and conditioning program. And really, honestly, I don't think the mountains stand the chance this year. I feel stronger. I feel more flexible. I feel like I could go longer than I've ever had before in the past. So if you are in the Phoenix area and this sounds like something you might need or you want to up your game, check out Triple Threat Performance. That's ttpaz.com. ttpaz.com. Hey, I also want to give props to the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. You heard me say it a million times. They're a game changer. And I'm not just saying it's not just lip service. They really are. They do what they're intended to do. And that is make a guy, woolly mammoth like myself, sound like a cat coming through the woods. And really just they're game changers. I think everybody should own a pair. It should be in your arsenal of weapons. And there is no other comparison out there. They're easy to put on, lightweight, easy to carry around with you. Don't take up a whole lot of weight and room in your backpack. It's almost foolish not to own a pair. So go check them out, Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, I brought Tim Gillingham back on with us. I've done a couple of podcasts recently about FOC and heavy arrow setups, and Tim and I were talking a week ago, and he reminded me that how many deer are on my wall from my old setups, and how some of it's and how many things he's killed and at great distances without having. So we're gonna play devil's advocate a little bit and hear the other side of the story, basically the other side of the coin. What's going on, Tim?
Oh, not too much. Just trying to get caught up with my 2 days in the office here. So
yeah, you got another tournament coming up?
Yeah, IBO Worlds next weekend, and then just got a few more.
Yeah.
Then I'm done. Then it's hunting season.
Then it's hunting season.
Yeah. Nice. 25 weeks. Mine, you know, you start to realize what weekends actually mean to people when you don't have them.
Right? Crazy.
Everybody thinks going to tournaments and shooting is just all fun and games, but it gets pretty, it wears on you, man.
Just traveling alone is tough, man.
Yeah, especially 16 years of it.
Yeah, right? I've been doing it, yeah, about the same, too, for me with the TV show and all that stuff. Just, you know, 10, 12 times a year, leaving out of state. It's rough. I can't actually, I really can't stand flying anymore. I can't. It just, the whole idea of going to an airport sucks. And honestly, if it's any more than 5-hour drive, I don't really like driving either. Become a grumpy old man. Like,
yeah, that's always the quandary, you know.
I want everything to be about 50 degrees, 50 to 70 degrees, and I want everything to be within 5 hours drive.
Yeah, flying for hunting sucks too, because you got to take so much stuff.
Yeah, I got it down to an exact science though. Like literally, I know my bags are like 48 pounds. Like everything's just like. Perfect.
I do too. I'm platinum stats with Delta. That's my way of dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I travel as press, so I can go heavier.
All right.
And I get to bring an extra bag, like my camera. Say, I got my press card. But travel as press, so I get to like bring my camera equipment and stuff like that. And of course, you know, I stuff extra shit in the camera bags and whatnot, but so, and then it, you know, some airlines have broken my chops about my boat case, because if technically, if they measure it this way, like length, width, and height has to add up to a certain amount, and if it goes over that, they charge you oversized bag fee.
It will always go over that.
Exactly, right? I mean, I got those big SKB cases or whatever. I got charged $150 for my bag one way, twice. So $300 on American Airlines 2 years ago when I went to Alabama. I about shit myself, man. It was like 300 bucks. That's like the ticket was 300 bucks.
You know the solution for that is, right?
Ship it.
Couple golf clubs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, golfers get exceptions. So, I mean, I fly Delta, you know, and they don't really give me much grief, you know.
Skis, too. I've heard guys with skis don't get bought. They don't get bothered. I'm like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got every case known to man. And if push comes to shove, I'll put it in a golf case. And they never they never even ask. So I have a boat case that actually fits inside of a golf case shell. And that works pretty well, too.
Yeah.
You kind of question when you're taking your golf clubs to Alaska, though.
Right. I bet.
No, yeah.
Tundra golfing. You know what? Actually, you know what? A guy, I'm trying to remember who it was. Might have been Jack Brittenham. Somebody told me to put musical instrument stickers on the outside of your bow case. And you'll see how much better they treat your stuff. Because I was telling whoever it was, and I can't remember, I was telling the story. I went to Canada, and I was looking outside the window, and I just happened to see the cart pull up, and I could see my case on the top. And man, it was a gun case and a bow case. I brought both. Or I went bear hunting, and I didn't know what I was going to hunt with. I ended up shooting it with my bow anyway. But my gun case. Literally like this, like chucked it, and I'm like, there's no way that scope's gonna be on, you know. It was like, I don't know. So yeah, so he's like, yeah, just put musical instrument, you know, stickers on the outside of it, and they start taking care of it much better.
Either that or get you an SKB bow case that's the shape of a bow.
Yeah,
if it's not square, they can't measure,
right?
And they just I took two single SKB cases and I screwed them together, so I got a double. Works pretty good.
Is it really?
Just kind of heavy. It's heavy. Yeah, they look kind of fine, but anyway, what's our topic today here?
Well, our topic is I called you the other day because I was talking about my wife's bow, and mm-hmm. I was thinking about changing her arrow setup. One, because she's only got like six arrows left right now anyway, because she broke a bunch. And I was thinking about, you know, building a little bit more, you know, not really getting crazy heavy on the arrow, but just building it with a little bit more FOC. And you were like, I don't know, we kind of went down the path about talking about Ashby and then, you know, extreme FOC and extreme weights and all that stuff. And we kind of went down a rabbit hole, and I just wanted to hear your perspective. So let's start with FOC. What's your take on the FOC thing?
Well, you know, like everything, it's everything within reason. There's this big trend running around, and I look at it, you know, I look at the forums, and it's just a handful of guys propagating it, but they got loud voices, and they act like a bunch of liberals. If you don't disagree with them, they, you know, they want to bash you and so on and so forth.
Right,
but the fact of the matter is, when you're dealing with bow hunting, there's several factors that contribute to penetration and having a successful result. You know, Ashby's testing, I don't agree with. You know, I don't agree with it from the fact that it was very controlled environment. I even hear rumors he didn't use compounds because he was getting pass-throughs. That pretty much kills the argument right there if that is the case.
Right.
Which is what most of us experience. You know, when you're shooting animals at 15, 20 yards, like he was over a blind, you're going to get pass-throughs on 90% of them.
Right.
So the hunting scenario is fluid, right? Number one reason we still miss, and I'll argue this to the death, is we don't know how far it is. Okay. Everything always comes back to that. Shot placement is number one in terms of penetration. Number two is broadhead design. Number three is arrow flight. You know, if you're going to try to shoot 60 pounds and shoot a 2.5 inch, you know, NAP kill zone, you probably better keep it in the rib cage, in the soft part. The upside of that is a big broadhead like that is if you do make a marginal shot, as long as it's not in the shoulder, you probably have a much, much larger chance of recovering that animal. I prefer, you know, rear deploy broadheads. I've shot some that are fallback, which the only reason I would do that is I feel like maybe, you know, one design that I shoot's probably the easiest to work with. It's the most accurate. It flies like a field point, clear to one, you know, 100, 120 yards. I was arguing with a guy online the other night, and I mentioned that, you know, the question was, do broadheads fly like field points? And I said, no, none of them. I found one in 35 years, and it flies clear to 120 yards. Well, and he just, like, you know, got his hackles up, and 120 yards is, that's not bow hunting, or 100 yards isn't bow hunting. Well, I'm here to tell you, I think anything inside of 100 is still bow hunting. Yep. You know, it's not the same as muzzleloaders now shooting 500 yards, or the average guy being able to go and buy a rifle that literally can shoot 900 out of the box. That's not even the same realm of comparison. I've never shot an elk over 63 yards. That's my longest shot. Am I prepared to take a longer one? Sure. If I need to make a backup shot or a second shot, if I get the right opportunity and I'm prepared, I may take a longer one. You know, arrow flight is very critical in this component. And I look at a lot of the long range shots that I've made on animals, most of them resulted in complete pass through. And I would attribute that to the arrow has been 100% corrected, and it's flying with every bit of the energy going right down the very center of the shaft. And so its transfer of energy is much, much better than when it's still flopping at 20 yards. So I don't, I think that's, you know, people talk about penetration at distance. I don't think that's even an issue. Broadhead design is pretty critical, though. I mean, if it's your wife or my wife shooting 43 pounds this year for elk, I'm not going to put her in the same broadhead I'm shooting. You know, I built her a Pierce, which is a very small, slender shaft. I put a deep six insert in it, and I put a deep six small wasp broadhead, because I think it's going to be the best happy medium for her. It keeps her speed up around 255, so she has a chance of hitting something. Because when you get your speeds down really low, it's, you know, it's very difficult. I mean, when you're, you know, 3 inches per yard at 40 yards, you know, you got to have the yardage exact. Personally, I'd rather hunt at 320 foot a second or higher, because it compresses my yardage errors. And I feel like some of the best shooting bows I got are speed bows, you know. So, you know, to each his own. Everybody has their own little niche and this and that. But, you know, some of these guys that argue the loudest have no experience, but just nobody knows it online. You know, shot, I don't even know how many animals I've taken with a bow, but it's probably over 100, you know. And, you know, guy that yelling the loudest, I find out, has taken one 2-point deer in his lifetime, you know. So it's really, you know. So FOC is way overplayed in its importance, way overplayed. You know, I have set up bows where I'm running 6 or even 7% FOC and able to hold 4-inch groups at 100 yards with it.
Is that because you're Jim Gillingham, or because?
No, it's because, well, I mean, another thing that people don't think about when they're loading the front of their arrows up, by loading the front of your arrow up, you're creating resistance. And I would argue that probably most people that start loading up their front of their arrow are not paying attention to the fact that when they do load it up, they're probably going to have to, you know, bump up a spine for every 30 or 40 grains that they put in the front. You know, there is some argument as to, you know, at some point, if you get it heavy enough up front, what happens behind it might not affect it. But there's also that same thing applies in forgiveness. If you start an arrow out in a direction because you made a mistake, the dynamics of the shot, you can't make it recover either. It's going there whether you like it or not now.
Right.
I just find in a lot of my tournament setups, I'm actually backing off of heavy point weights. I just pulled 50 grains out of my triple X's for ASA last week, and what a difference. And I believe it's because it gave the vein control over the arrow. Okay. When I go heavy points, I need more vein. When I shoot fixed blades, I need more vein. More vein creates more noise. Okay, there's lots of factors in bow hunting, you know, but I'm a big proponent of, you know, take a happy medium and approach to weight, somewhere in the, you know, 380 to 420 range, even down to 350 doesn't really matter to me. Right. There's plenty of weight to penetrate, you know, most animals on the North American continent. I like mechanical broadheads, good mechanical broadheads. And I say where there is mechanical broadhead failure, 90% of the time, there's a shooter involved that didn't do his homework. That's not paying attention to detail. Because I don't know that I've ever had a mechanical broadhead failure other than with the ones that you shoot.
Come on. You didn't have any failures with them. You just,
well,
that's
actually,
what happens.
Yeah,
you, that's what happens. So let me explain something. I have a story, okay? I shot NAP Nitrons for a long time, okay?
And that's not the ones I'm talking about.
I know. I know that's not the ones. You're talking about Schwackers. I shot NAP Nitrons for a long time. And I shot a cow elk with one year. And I hit her in the bread box. And I lost that cow. So automatically, I was like, screw these broadheads. They suck. People have one bad experience. Like, I don't know. Like, for me, I saw the arrow hit. I was only a 30-yard shot. I saw the arrow hit in, you know, in the lungs. I recovered the arrow because it was a pass-through. It was covered in blood. And I followed a blood trail for a long distance. And for whatever reason, I never found that cow. So I just automatically blamed it on the broadhead. You know, like, and I think people, I mean, I know you tinker more than anybody I ever freaking met in my life, but
it's not tinkering.
I feel like
it's
most people.
It's the refinement of knowledge.
I feel like most people, they have a bad experience with something for whatever God, you know, whatever reason it is. You know, you don't know what exactly happened because there's no camera attached to your arrow, you know, recording what happened. But, you know, I was a do or die fixed broadhead guy forever and ever and ever. I originally switched over to Rage. I had a couple of bad experiences with Rage, not in the killing part, but them opening while I was stalking, rattling around,
again,
stupid
but
shit
again,
like
that. That just goes back to verify what I just said. There's always a shooter,
right?
A shooter preparation problem there, because when I shot Rage invited me to their broadhead trade shoot at the trade show. Mm-hmm. It took me about one day to figure out all the problems and another half an hour to figure out a solution. I never had a problem with the Rage.
Yeah, but I didn't want to have to put extra bands and extra bullshit. I know I originally was like with the Dremel cutting little grooves and I don't want to do this shit. I want to go buy a freaking broadhead.
Right.
I want to screw it on my freaking arrow and I want to shoot something.
Yeah, well, that's the reason. That was the reason I didn't shoot Rage after that, is because it did require a lot of headache in order to try to practice with them to get them where you felt like, hey, I want to hit behind the pin in the field.
Right.
I pick my models of broadheads now based on the ability to practice with the head. Okay. And, you know, yeah, Schwacker's good, but, you know, when I had two bad experiences in one trip with the same head, and, you know, I know guys kill tons of stuff with them every year. I just, in my mind, even the fallback designs, I shoot a Bloodsport Night Fury. I really like it. It flies like a field point, and I love it. We killed a few deer on Kodiak with it. But if I had to make my choice on an elk, I wouldn't go with that broadhead because I don't think that the blade angle's right. But I also want an entry hole on an elk. A lot of times you don't, if you don't get to the other side, I want entry hole because I want a big entry hole like a kill zone shoots or a Rage or something like that, because then I get blood right where I hit the animal. A lot of times shoot elk with a fixed blade, you know, they may run 100 yards before they leave any blood. And gosh, if that happens, you know, 20 minutes before dark, that can be rough, you know. So, you know, it's lots of, I just look at different designs, and you know, I want something that's going to get me an entry hole. I want something that's reliable. You know, I just think there's some designs that just shine over others, and I'm a huge fan of rear deploy designs because of the entry holes. And there's lots of good ones. You know, there's Dead Meat, there's Rage, there's Killzone. I'm going to be playing with a new broadhead called a Thorn this year, which I believe is just an improvement over the kill zone, and it deploys exactly the same way. It's just, it flies completely closed, which solves the problem of practicing with it. And it also solves, just kind of like the Omer edges were, yeah. You know, you could pin the blade shut so you could effectively practice with them. You know, the kill zones, their practice blades fly just like the field, you know, just like the broadhead. They don't fly like a field point. And frankly, is one thing people need to understand is they don't tune like the field point. If you shoot a 30-inch arrow and a 28.5-inch arrow, they're not going to shoot the same through paper. So therefore, a field point and a long broadhead are not going to tune the same. The solution, if you're going to shoot a longer broadhead, is to tune your arrows with something like a bare match point. Now, I buy the bare match points, and I, you know, they're not very well made. They're 60 series aluminum. They bend really easy. But as long as I don't have another solution, you know, that's what I deal with. But that gives me a much more accurate tune of my arrow, because people have to understand that the broadhead is always going to steer opposite of the paper tear. So you want to have a methodology for building your arrows and tuning your arrows. Otherwise, you're just going to, it's just like buying 22 shells. You buy this 22 shell, it groups like this out of this gun. You buy this one, it groups like this. You know, if you spend enough time, you know, you might be able to find a 22 shell that groups the best out of that particular barrel. But usually I can tune every single arrow to basically shoot in the same hole by just tuning methods, you know. So you kind of like reloading ammo to your gun, same difference. You gotta buy that, you gotta earn that next level of accuracy. And fixed blades just make it worse.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I'm
don't
going
like
down
fixed
this
blades.
Road right now. I'm going down, you know, this road right now because I And so, because I'm going to Oregon, I can't use a mechanical.
Going what now?
I'm going to Oregon for elk, and I can't use a mechanical. I'm not allowed to.
Oregon, yeah, Oregon and Idaho, the last two.
Yeah, last two holding on.
Holding on
for dear life. Anyway, so I got a hold of guys at Valkyrie. I heard a lot of good things. I got some friends that shoot him, and you know, so I'm going down this road with it, and I haven't had to dick around so much with tuning my bow for such a long time, because really, I mean, it's almost been plug and play for me for a while. I mean, when I set my bow up, I usually shoot, if my bear shaft, my field point, and my broadhead are all pretty much hitting the same hole by the time I'm done. And I haven't been able to get that to happen with the fixed blade. You know, and
you know, you deal with a Valkyrie, you're dealing with a very long broadhead, a very heavy broadhead. How are you going to mimic
right.
that in a field point scenario?
Yeah.
Wow. You can really
here's their field points right here. They're quite long, and they, you know, they are matched to obviously the same weight. So these are the 250s right here. But it was really crazy because when I first set it up, I didn't have the broadheads. And I started shooting it. I started shooting with the field points. I have the 225 grain field point, their collar on a Pierce 250 spine.
At what pound?
Okay.
At what pound?
73 pounds.
And I would say that's probably way too weak.
Too weak? 250 spine?
250 grain point. Do you have any idea what that does to the front arrow?
It's 225 grain point, but yeah, I get.
But that creates a resistance, which forces the arrow to bend until it gets moving.
Right.
So I mean, the way you track that and the way you look at it is, if you take all 12 of your arrows and you shoot them through paper, what kind of variation are you getting? If you're getting a lot of variation, you know it's just too weak.
Right.
Now, that being said, you can always tune to the optimal spot. Which is, you know, tuning them all into where they react the same. But it becomes increasingly difficult as the arrow simply can't handle the load being transferred by the bow.
Right.
You know. So.
So originally, when I first set it up, I was getting bullet holes through paper. And honestly, I was almost thinking about switching over 100% because I shot my best 3D with it. And my bow's only shooting 260. It varied shot to shot, was 259 at 261. I shot it 10 times. The lowest was 259, the highest was 261. So right around that 260 mark. Not a very fast arrow in
I
today's
wouldn't
day
even.
and age.
I would never hunt with that.
I wouldn't, I normally I wouldn't either. And then I started thinking to myself, well, you know what? I killed I don't know how many animals in 1990, and my bow shot slower than that with a shittier, you know, but
It's
whatever.
not. Yeah, it's not saying you can't do it. It's
Right,
just saying
I know, obviously guys do it all the time at
you
123
don't
per
hunt with
second.
a 30. You don't hunt with a 30-30 either, and it killed a lot of deer too.
Yeah, that's true. No,
Or even a not
I
six.
hunt with a 35 actually. No, but yeah, but I shot so good, accurate, I mean, I'm a decent 3D shooter. I don't really aim to shoot 12s. Let's put it that way. I just when I do 3D, it's for me. It's for practice for hunting. I just want to make sure I'm making kill shots. Usually, that's the way I do it. But I decided to, you know, be a little competitive and I shot nothing but 10s and 12s in three different events with that
Yeah.
setup. And I was like, yo, this thing's freaking, it's a laser beam, you know? And then I got the broadheads and I started messing with the broadheads. I couldn't get that damn, I couldn't get them to group. And that was driving me nuts. And
Well, there's several
so,
reasons. When you have that kind of point weight up front and it's got a steering ability, it just increases the amount of vane you need on the rear of the
right.
shaft.
I end up changing my vanes, making a little hair adjustment on the rest, and now I'm grouping them.
Yeah,
But
you're
my
grooming
whole
deep.
point is, this is all too much work for me to do. Okay? I got too much shit on my plate. I don't want to be doing all this stuff every time I get a bow. I get a new bow every year, you know? Sometimes two.
I get five or six of them. I don't want to hear you.
Exactly. Do you realize, I don't have the time to set up freaking that many bows every year. I don't have that much time to spend, you know?
Just got to get good at it.
Well, I'm not. So I'm terrible at tuning. Terrible. I always have to go to the archery shop and have either Chris or Daniel, Tony or
You're
some one of
probably,
those guys
that's
help me out.
because you're probably not shooting a Bowtech is why.
I'm not. No, I know. You're always so quick to put everything I have freaking down, man. You know what? Thank God I
Mean, they're
shoot
just
gold tip because you can't put those down. You work for them.
I'm just saying some bows are a heck of a lot easier to tune than others.
Yeah.
And there's reasons for it.
I've heard, now this is a different topic, but I've heard from a lot of guys who work Bowtechs saying that Tri-X is super easy for them to tune. They're ha not having a hard time
Yeah,
tuning it,
well,
but
yeah, Matthews has done a better job with that wider limb base they have and that real rigid riser definitely helps. It helps with keeping the cam straight, and that's going to make it a lot more tunable. But when you get in these crazy setups, when you need little fine tunes, you have to actually move the wheel a lot of time in order to make it tune. Now, little arrows like the Pierce will tend to react more from the rest movement. But as you go to medium diameter arrows and bigger, it tend to have to move the wheels
Right.
left and right in order to tune them. And you take an overdrive binary cam system like with yokes like the Bowtech has, and you just have a much wider range that you can tune to the individual shooter and how they hold the bow. But yeah, I don't hear a lot of tuning problems out of the new Matthews stuff.
Yeah, the last couple, the Halon 32 and the Tri-X. A little
Yeah.
prior to that, they went down a little bit of a down a road that they were having some issues. I remember having some tuning issues. But anyway, so I've been getting now I've been going down this road, looking at FOC, looking at heavier arrows, blah 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 blah. I'm gonna play devil's advocate. You were talking about, you know, shot placement and being able to steer, you know, broadhead design, steering the arrow, all that stuff. And most guys are talking about, the ones that seem like they know what they're talking about, on the extreme FOC, not extreme FOC, but heavy FOC and heavier arrows, are talking about, we're basically saying this, I'm not designing my arrow. That they're basically designing their arrow so that when it's not the perfect shot, that it's still going to do the job.
Everybody's got their argument. And I would totally... I'll figure out how to turn that thing off. The argument I have with that is frankly, I do not think it is reliable to propagate that you can build an arrow setup that is going to blow through major bone. I think it's total BS. Okay. Yes, you might be able to shoot through a shoulder blade of a deer. You might even shoot through a shoulder blade of an elk. I've seen a buddy of mine shoot completely through both shoulders of an elk. Complete pass through. He got lucky. Okay. He got lucky. He hit a spot with no bone in it. But if you hit that major leg bone, you hit a knuckle, you ain't going through. I'm shooting 112 foot-pounds of energy, a 515 grain arrow doing, you know, 315 foot a second. It stops like a bad habit.
Right.
You know, if you ever hang a target up, these animals absorb energy, especially if they're moving as as they're taking the arrow, okay? It is not reliable to say you can shoot through the shoulder blade of an elk. That is crap, and I get tired of hearing it propagated. You know, you're dealing with very, very niche setups. It's right. Much, much better to teach a guy how to hit what he's aiming at. And then he can shoot a wide spectrum of broadheads or arrows or, you know, what have you. But to basically, you know, buy into the niche, no. I think it's a mistake. Number one reason guys miss. They don't know how far it is. And speed is going to help that.
Right.
Speed. I'm shooting my IBO bow last night. I'm shooting 340 foot a second. I shoot that bow arguably better with probably 6% FOC. I probably shoot that bow better than a lot of bows that I have. And I think it's because the arrow gets out and away from my mistakes faster. I firmly right. believe. And it's a light Good point. Idea, yeah. It's a 90 grain point, so that arrow recovers faster. You know, I won IBO World 1 year with a 50 grain point in a triple X. That setup shot awesome. Yeah. You know, I know a guy named Jim Bath out of Manhattan, Kansas. This guy's killed just a number of very large whitetail deer. And, you know, 20 years ago, he's shooting a 318 ACC at 75 pounds and shooting them almost close to 400 foot a second. And he's running a rocket 75 grain broadhead glued into the front of the arrow. And his sole purpose is to keep that animal from jumping the string. And if you look at most whitetail hunters or most, you know, not coos deer, I'm beginning to wonder how anybody can actually kill a coos deer. You know, I mean, as much of a reaction as I got out of the one that I shot, I mean, probably every one of them is a little different, I'm sure. But they are unbelievably fast. I mean, they remind me of an animal I shot at in South Africa. It was a mountain reed buck. I mean, just like a coos deer. I mean, that thing was nowhere near the arrow when it got there, you know?
I've seen him jump arrow, you know, 30 yards. Guy can full draw in a blind, and guy's, it's drinking out of the water hole and got its head down and everything and still ducking arrow.
I've seen him, not the one I shot was laying down. He come clear to his feet before the arrow got there. It was crazy. But, you know, Whitetails are dealing, you know, you're dealing with.
Hey guys, just a real quick break. Pardon the interruption. I want to talk to you about becoming a patron of the show. It's super easy. You just go to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters on my Podbean account, and at the top right hand corner, you'll see a green button that says Become a Patron. Or if you're using the Podbean app, it's right there. Just click on the button. Become a patron from any of the episodes. I really go out of my way not to bombard you with a bunch of ads and clutter up the, clutter up the episodes. I really like to keep it as educational and as valuable as possible. I'd like to add to that value by adding some bonus episodes that are going to be just for the patrons only. I'm going to release a few that are strictly for those of you who have contributed to the podcast. It really goes a long way, and I want to say it again that even a dollar a month, pledging a dollar a month, $12 a year may not seem like a whole lot, but it means the world to me. It helps me take care of the cost of producing this show, and I really appreciate it, and I'd appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening, and let's get back to this episode.
Buddy's calling me from Sweden.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, white-tailed deer hunter is the majority of, hunting in the US. You're dealing with
Right.
animals, you're in a tree stand, you've ranged to several points, you kind of got an idea how far that trail is and this trail, but it's very realistic to expect to be 2 to 3 or 4 yards off of what you guessed, or what you range that, because everything's fluid and moving. That animal's usually coming through fast. He's trailing a doe. You're stopping him. Things are happening fast. You're shooting through tight holes in the brush. And nothing about that scenario, and I'm a master of building setups to situations. I build IBO setups, ASA setups, field setups, and I build everything to maximize its potential. And nothing about that situation tells me I want a stupid, slow, heavy arrow. Nothing.
I get you. I get you.
Maybe I don't want to shoot a forward-facing broadhead because if it hits the grass or a twig, it might deflect differently. Or I've had that happen whitetail hunting where it caught and flipped the arrow. And so when I think about stuff like that, I think about, well, maybe I want a broadhead like this new Thorn where it would slide through all that stuff. I mean, I literally missed a deer when I hit a branch that was no more than 3 feet from him because I was shooting a forward-facing blade and it caught one of them. It just flipped the arrow. So I, end over
I've
end.
had that happen to me,
So
unfortunately.
forward-facing broadheads, that's my biggest sense of issues with them. I'd much rather prefer a rear deploy. Everybody used to bash punch cutters. My first deer I shot on Kodiak was with punch cutters. I liked them.
I never
I
even
knew
seen
it
them. Never heard of them.
was a plunger tip two blade broadhead. I didn't even think it had about a 1 inch cut knife or two blade, but deer I shot with them didn't know the difference. But there's lots of designs out there. You're not going to convince everybody, to
So,
follow.
I mean, there's no real cure-all for any situation, really,
Yeah,
except for
sometimes
being a
just
better
the
shot.
egos. Yeah, sometimes just the egos involved in hunting and stuff. You just, guys have to carve their own niche, and they have to, makes them feel good they're doing something different, and rather than just being, status quo. Where the majority of them, they're just good getting an XT hunter and going out and killing deer, And most guys can't outshoot an XT hunter. We had one of our shooters, he set a new animal round record at outdoor field nationals, with an XT hunter shooting
Really?
screw in. He shoots screw in points, but it's a phenomenal arrow, and for most North American game, it's really hard to beat. It
I
really
shot
is.
the 100 pros and actually the XTs before that, yeah.
Yeah, same. It's basically same arrow.
Yeah, I had
Based
shot
on.
those 100 pros forever, ever and ever. I really like the Pierce though. I've had really, really good luck with them.
Yeah, we've done really well. For where you hunt out in Arizona and stuff, it has a technical advantage. But most people, there's no technical advantage for them to shoot that arrow like. Really, its technical advantage happens, 70, 80, 90 yards, or in heavy winds and things like
Right,
that.
winds. I was going to say the wind's probably the biggest thing. My cousin Anthony,
last year. Was it last year? Yeah, I think last year. He just wanted to try the pierce out. So I end up giving him three of my arrows, cut to my length. Now he's a 27-inch draw. Wait, is he 27? Yeah. He texted me this morning. He's like, "If you're on with Tim today, I want you to ask him this question." So his bow is set up at 65 pounds. He's shooting my arrow that I gave him. And because he shot very well for him, he just left it the way it is. So it's like 3 or 4 inches out in front of the riser. Like it's a long arrow for him, but it's a 300 spine. It's 427 grains. It's shooting 270 feet per second for him, which is not fast by any means. And it shoots great. Like it really, he shoots really, really, really well with it. And with his slider, he shoots out to 100 yards, no problem. He's got a spot hog father or whatever. I don't know, one of those spot hog ones with it. But he asked me, because I had suggested, I said, "Well, you're shooting your short draw length. Why don't you go to a 340? Cut the arrow to your length."
Right.
I said, "You could put a 20 grain fact
Not
behind the
necessary.
you." It's not necessary, but he'd still be 20 grains lighter than he was
Right. But the
total
point
arrow,
is,
so he's gonna pick up speed and he would have kind of like the best of both worlds.
problem is people freak out about arrow tuning and stuff, and they find this one magical setup, and all of a sudden it's got to be that. I have a methodology for doing things, okay? You pick the proper arrow spine or a stiff enough arrow. You powder tune for clearance. You paper tune the bow. You paper tune each arrow till they all match and do exactly the same thing. Every single arrow will group at that point, you know. But more likely, when they have a setup that's not grouping, they don't know why. They don't know why. I mean, I go and ask a lot of target shooters, why do you leave your, why is your this arrow? Why do you leave this arrow long? And you know what? I have never got a good answer out of one of them. This is top end target shooters. I just always cut them that length. I have a reason for why I cut arrows to the rest and why I recommend arrows being cut to the rest. I have an absolute reason. Probably
What is
6 or 7 years ago,
it? Okay.
when people started talking about torque tuning, Jesse Broadwater started talking about torque tuning, and you know, Greg Poole was trying to get me to cut my arrows off because I was shooting an overdraw, right? And my rest was in the wrong spot, and supposedly when he did it, you know, 3/4 inch from the grip was perfect, and you need to move your rest forward. I'm like, whatever. So finally, I decide I'm going to do this, right? So I take my bows out, my 3D bow, IBO and ASA to 50 yards, because that's the max distance I'm shooting. I twist the bow left, twist the bow right, put the pin in the middle, pull the trigger. They're spot on. I mean, they're torque tuned perfect. I'm not changing a thing. And that's what I mean, I just basically noticed nothing. I shot an overdraw because I wanted to shoot shorter arrows, and I never saw a loss of accuracy. So then I go to my field setup with pro hunters that I had going on right then. 80 yards I did it at. Torque tuned it, all of them in the 10 ring. Twist the bow left, twist the bow right, put the pin in the middle, everything's right down the middle. Then I got to this fourth setup, and I was shooting a skinny pultruded carbon at the time, and I think I had a limb driver on at the time. With a limb driver launcher. And all of a sudden, I got a foot and a half spread at 80 yards, maybe even more. So I said, well, here's a good chance. I got a little bit of arrow hanging out. I'm going to move the rest forward and see if what Greg said is true. So I did. I missed the entire 4x4 block. So, number one, he missed a whole bunch of the importance of what goes on in torque tuning. So then I brought the rest back to where the rest of the bows were set up. And I got to looking at it and I says, well, what is different? Okay. And the only thing I could come up with is there wasn't as much guidance on that skinny little arrow as there was on the fatter arrows. So I took a pair of needle nose pliers and I bent the launcher up on the sides. That arrow went from a foot and a half spread at 80 yards to all of them in the 10 ring like that. And I've seen that one other time when I was shooting a shooting machine and I just changed the launcher blade from a narrow blade to a wide blade on a bigger arrow. And I went from a inch and a half group to 8 out of 10 in the same hole. So absolutely, there's a reason why. When you put, it's leverage, okay? When you put 140 grains 4 inches in front of the rest, the rest doesn't have the ability to correct it like it does if it's sitting close to the rest. That's the reason why. Also, if you have 4 inches hanging out over the rest, twist it left and right and see how much the point moves. The closer it is to the pivot point of that rest, the faster it's going to correct if you make a mistake. And the rest is very pivotal in correcting your mistakes. If you look at the Hamsky AccuGlide rest, it has a contour in it. That contour is there for a reason. It's to give side pressure no matter what the aero diameter you're running. Okay. So yes, there's a reason. Can you kill there with it? Can you win tournaments like that? Absolutely you can. But I dang sure don't think it's the best way to go. Like you said, he can cut it off. Number one, he's already shooting way slower than I'd slow, but so by cutting 3 inches of the arrow off, you know, he's gonna basically, if you're dealing with a three, even if it was a 340, that's 25 grains of arrow weight. That's gonna be another 8 or 9 foot a second just there. Okay, if you've got another 20 grain weight screw in there, that's another 6 grains. That puts him up in what I consider more optimal 285, 295 speed limit, you know, where I like to set my hunting bows up. And he'll be way better off and have his sight marks will be less critical because of speed. You know, if you go someplace that has an atmospheric change, like, you know, you go from here to Kodiak Island, for example, and you're shooting 260 foot a second. Your sight tapes are going to be brutally off compared to a guy doing 310, just because of how the, you know, the arrow goes through, you know, through the thicker air. Lost you.
Lost me?
There you go. Looked like you were talking, but
I was mumbling. I was agreeing with you.
So there's, just because you can kill a deer with something, just because, you know, your group went from 6 inches to 4 inches doesn't mean it's optimal.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
There's probably other contributing factors. You know, and we're fixing to do on the 22nd, I got a camera guy coming up here, and we're fixing to do a tuning series, and I'm going to teach the methodologies that I'm talking about, and it's going to be good. It's going to be really good. I think it's going to really dispel a lot of problems and help people solve a lot of problems that they've had over the years and really give them an A to Z approach to tuning a setup.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be good, man. Make sure you send me the link. I'll put it in with the show notes because this probably won't air for a couple weeks. So how long do you think until you get it out?
Well, it'll take a bit to edit this. So this is a pretty good project. I mean, I'm thinking just off the top of my head, it's probably in the tuning series, it'll probably be at least 5 videos.
Okay.
So you're going to have to cover broad, you know, paper tuning, you know, paper tuning, bear shaft tuning, broadhead tuning, tuning the different types of bows and the solutions, you know, mm-hmm. and then basically how they all correlate to each other.
Right.
Bear shaft and broadhead tuning are one and the same. Bear shaft and paper tuning are one and the same.
Right.
Broadhead always steers opposite the paper tear. Bear shaft always steers opposite the paper tear.
The opposite
some
way.
Some people are just too good to shoot through paper.
Yeah, that's me.
No, I shoot. If I don't shoot 5,000 arrows a year through paper, I'd be shocked. I bet you I shoot closer to 10,000.
I shoot about 10. But I'm a set it up and leave it kind of guy, man. I don't screw with shit.
Well, I mean, I'm running 6 different bows and I'm running a lot of different setups, you know, for different types of archery. But before I test something, it all has to be shot in. It all has to be tuned out. And it's a lot of work. I mean, but, you know, I'm trying to proof the stuff out to me so that I can look you in the eye and tell you I know what I'm talking about.
It's important. I mean, a lot of people come to you. I mean, you're always dispensing, you know, knowledge to people, always dispensing advice. So it's kind of,
but whether they want to hear it or not,
some of that's true.
Yeah. I always said I'll argue to the death on something I know. I may give a little bit on something I speculate, but I will argue to the death on something I know.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. I think that gives a lot of food for thought for people to kind of, you know, think about what it is that they're doing. There is no cure all.
There's no perfect situation. There's, you know, same thing in rifles. You can shoot, you know, you can shoot an elk from a 22 caliber all the way up to a 458, nobody would care. It dies the same, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, arrows are no different, okay? You can shoot them with a stone point, or you can shoot them with a steel point. You can shoot them with a four blade, a three blade, a six blade, a two blade mechanical. But just because there's all those options doesn't mean that some aren't better than others, okay? Yeah. Doesn't mean that some broadhead designs aren't better than others. It doesn't mean that some arrows, you know, yeah, all arrows can get the broadhead to the kill zone. It doesn't mean some arrows aren't built better than others.
Yeah.
Some, you know, it doesn't mean that some bows aren't easier to tune than others, or more reliable, or have better limb pockets, or better quality, you know, more reliable, you know, systems, you know, there are.
Me personally, I've always taken a super happy medium approach to everything when it comes to hunting. Mm-hmm. I never go too much of an extreme either way, and never built a super fast setup. The only time I ever did was for a target bow with some fat shafts, which I never picked back up again anyway. But my personal feeling is I go with a medium weight, like from 420 to 440 total weight. I'm a 29-inch draw, 29 and a half, depends on the bow I shoot. 420 to 440, so not super heavy, not super light. I'm usually getting about 290-ish out of my bows. I like to be no less than 285 at the very least, but 290, 295. I've had some bows that were 305, and right now I'm shooting probably closer to 300 right now, but... yeah, it's just that's been my thing. As far as FOC is concerned, I've always had about between right around 15%, 14-15% FOC.
And I never measure it.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, I've measured it like once, and literally my arrow setup for the last 3 years has been the same. Like, I haven't had to change it for any bow because it's shot good out of the last three bows.
I got a manufacturer that's building me a broadhead now that is going to kind of solve what I consider solve the issue with mounting broadheads to small diameter arrows. Okay. And that's simply by gluing the broadhead in.
Oh, okay.
And when I start that arrow, I'm only going to start with a 100 grain head. I'm going to see how it shoots. Because if it shoots a 3-inch group at 100 yards.
How are you going to regulate how much glue? Like, you might have 20 grains of glue in one and 30 grains in another, like weight wise.
It's impossible to get that kind of glue change.
I'm being extreme, but
if you put hot melt glue on a target point when you put in the shaft, you're going to get no more than a half a grain spread, no matter what you could possibly.
Right.
Because the glue is squeegeed off as it's put in the shaft. I mean, you can't.
Oh, so the guy that are building a broadhead are going to build it like those.
It's like a glue on target point.
Okay. Okay. I thought you were going to just glue in. Like, I was trying to figure out.
It's going to glue in, and it's going to accept our gold tip weight system. You know, you know, and I think it'll make a very high end surgical system. You know, the only problem is, you know, you have to shoot that broadhead. So you're going to like that broadhead.
Yeah.
But it also gives him a niche to promote too. So I think it's going to be an extremely surgically accurate setup.
Yeah.
Very, very good at long range because I can, and in the wind because you can run so much smaller vanes on it. We call it a coos deer killer.
There you go. I came up with an ingenial design myself last night, and then I did some research online and found out somebody's kind of already got something. I was thinking about putting Bluetooth in, making an insert that had Bluetooth so you can track your, and I didn't know there was Knox out there already that you can track.
Oh, I met a guy at the one of the last IBOs that had something like that, or he was at OPA. Mm-hmm. He's got a company doing something like that. So I just don't see the point with that. It just makes no sense to me.
Well,
you know, it's like I want something that just hits behind the shoulder every freaking time, and then the animal's going to die in sight if I use the right broadhead. You know, right. I just don't. So what if you put a barb on the back of your arrow and it stabs into the animal and you track it all over hell and back?
Oh, it wasn't for tracking the arrow. It was for finding your arrow. Not tracking the animal, but finding your arrow. That's was my where my brain was. Because I got a pass-through on this pig in California, and the freaking grass is this goddamn high. And I couldn't find my damn arrow.
Well, if you'd been shooting a freaking... rage,
what's that?
If you'd been shooting a rage instead of a schwacker, you'd have had a blood trail out both sides. Just you probably had a little pinhole because it never went out the other side, huh?
No, it was a pass through, man. Come on.
Pass through. Well, I don't know what to tell you, then.
It was a pass through, and so I was Charles, the guy, my friend that I was hunting with. He's like, he usually shoots them with kudu points. Okay, so that's in and out, same size hole. He shoots 125 grain kudus. And he's like, usually those pigs, doesn't matter what you shoot them with, for the first 10 or 15 yards, because they're fat, the blood doesn't come out right away.
Now, that's hair. That's the difference between a rear deploy broadhead and one that's not, because you get a huge hole and a huge sucking chest wound. Hmm. I just believe things expire faster with that.
Yeah.
Because they suck so much air into their lung cavity. Very quickly.
Gotcha. Well, I'll keep shooting. I'll keep shooting schwackers until they fail me, and I get pissed off at them.
If you found your arrow, what is that gonna? What's that gonna tell you?
Oh, at first when I was looking for it, I didn't see blood. I wanted to find my arrow to see what the hell I did, you know, to see if I hit something good. And then I went several more yards down the trail, and there was blood everywhere, and I found the pig within 60 yards, but
if you'd have been shooting a 600 grain arrow with a 200 grain point, you'd have probably got a better pass through.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It would have been deeper in the dirt that I couldn't find.
How far into the ground do you actually want to shoot? I would rather shoot something, like I said, that gives me a huge entry hole. Cause you know, a lot of times if you've got quartering, you're not going to get out the other side.
Yeah.
So I just love rear deploy heads. I just think they're, and I don't think there's any better design on the market than an NAP kill zone.
So what you're saying is you like rear deploying heads.
I do. this new Thorn broadhead that I'm going to be shooting.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't killed anything with it, so I don't, you know, but it, in my mind, it works just like a kill zone. It doesn't have quite the cutting diameter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 1 3/4, but that's adequate. We'll see.
Cool. We'll see what you do this season with them.
Well, you put them in right here behind the shoulder. It ain't gonna matter.
Yep, that's the truth right there. Shot placement. Well, I'll let you know what happens in Oregon. I'm fairly confident with the setup right now. We'll see what happens. See if it even comes into play. You know,
when I go to Idaho, I normally shoot like a Grim Reaper Hades is always what I've found the best luck with. And mm-hmm. one thing I'll talk to the guys your viewership about is one thing I'll caution you against is if you do get a broadhead that has an angled blade, like a Ramcat or there's a couple other ones out there that have angled blades like Muzzies and NAP has one. You absolutely have to be very careful on getting the amount of rotation in your fletchings to match that. I would recommend against that
mm-hmm.
and just go to a straight head and let your broadhead let your veins do the spinning. Because if you get that ratio wrong, mm-hmm. it's like throwing a knuckleball. In fact, I bought $800 worth of Ramcats. I was taking a bunch of guys from Sweden and I fletched all their arrows left offset because most of my arrows naturally spin to the left.
Mm-hmm.
That equated to about a 4 foot group at 100 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, they just absolutely come unhinged. You know, and I switched to some Grim Reaper Hades, and, you know, I can hold those realistically with no wind, you know, usually about 6 inches at 100.
Impressive.
But the problem with fixed blades are, I mean, it's just they're dicey, man. The wind hits them, you miss three times further. You make a mistake, and nobody under the heat of the moment shoots like they do in practice. Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some logic behind your slower 200 grain point being more forgiving in that scenario. I would like to see that proven out in under fire.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know, man.
If the guys so believe in those setups, then I say we have a broadhead shooting championship of the world, and We'll see what
happens. You should come to the Arizona 100-yard broadhead shoot. You should come do that. It
doesn't pay enough.
Yeah, it's bragging rights. It really doesn't pay enough. But
when do they do that?
I think it just passed.
Wasn't it at sunrise? Don't they do it at sunrise now?
No. Sunrise is they have a couple of, like, long shoots or whatever, an extreme course and whatever.
I bet a prediction. There's not a single fixed blade ever won it.
I don't think anybody's ever even entered with a fixed blade.
Well, proves my point right there.
Yeah. Ulmer Edge has won it. I know a guy with a slick trick expandables won it last year, I think.
Yeah. If I had to enter a broadhead contest, I'd probably shoot my Thorns.
Yeah.
Or I'd shoot that Bloodsport Night Fury. They fly super.
Cool. I'll have to check them out and see what they look like. I'm just such a creature of habit. I hate switching stuff, man. Making changes makes my skin crawl. I get so because I feel like a lot of my success comes from my confidence. I think confidence in the field is probably your biggest tool, or at least it is for me. When I go out there and I feel like, regardless if it's the truth or not, I mean, a lot of times it makes me do stupid shit, but when I go out there, I feel like John Stallone's the greatest hunter of all time. In my head, even though I really don't believe that, but I make myself believe that when I'm hunting, and it usually equates to success because of it. Does that make sense? And when I do shit that messes with my confidence, I second guess myself, whatever.
It's all relative to as much time you want to devote to it. But, you know, I always, my biggest quote is, those who try nothing, learn nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. You're only relegated inside of your
that's
what
true.
What you've personally played with, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's true. There's a lot to be said about
you that. You know, I shot my dull sheep with rocket sidewinders, and we used to shoot those out to 100 and could keep them in a paper plate 25 years ago. But you talk about a pain in the butt to practice with? You know, you'd have to get it out of the target, bend all the blades back shut, put a new rubber band on it. And, yeah, it'd take you 20 minutes just to get ready to shoot another round. How much fun is that?
Nope, none at all. None at all. All right,
and what equates, you know, what makes you confident with your hunting bow is understanding, number one, my broadheads are going to hit where heck I point them and where I set my sight. I would argue that probably over 50% of bow hunters going out there could not tell you exactly where their broadhead in hunt mode is going to hit. They probably hope it hits, but I bet you $100 you put up a standard size paper plate, most of them couldn't hit it at 60 yards.
Yeah. I've witnessed it.
But you know, they'll be out there posting their groups on Instagram and Facebook, but it's all field point groups. The difference between a field point and a broadhead are light years, even mechanicals. Mm-hmm. So I strive to find mechanicals that I can actually practice with. You know, and that actually have a reliable, you know, method to practice.
Agreed. All right, man. Well, I'm going to let you go. Okay. Good luck to you on your next the Worlds or wherever you're going.
And, IBO World Championship, yeah. Snowshoe Mountain, West Virginia.
Nice.
I won my first one there in 2006.
Nice. I'm going to be up on the Manti here pretty soon. I'll be in your neck of the woods.
Jason
Elk? No, I have a deer tag, just general deer.
Deer.
Yeah, I'll be there in a couple weeks, 2 weeks.
I think Kevin's actually, the officer's hunting there, Kevin Wilkie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think he's got a deer tag down there.
Nice.
I don't know if I'll get to go up in the early season. I might try. Most of the time after the season's over, I just like to veg for a couple weeks. But yeah. And I got this new FX pellet gun that is just tripping my trigger.
Tell me about it. You're just going crazy with these pellet gun things, huh? Are you going to get into pellet gun shooting competitions now, too?
I took out a Eurasian last night at 206 yards. awesome.
Oh, that's amazing.
They're amazing, really. I mean, it's funny. It's a whole new frontier. It's this whole new learning process, you know, and trying to figure out. You know, yeah. I've been doing it for 6 months, and I probably know more about it than 90% of the guys. I'm just getting junked out on it, you know. Well, that's probably it.
What?
No, there's some pretty sweet guns out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm gonna get the next one. I'm getting 30 cal.
30 cal?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I throw a 50 grain chunk of lead downrange.
There you go. All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
I'll see you.
Bye.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there. A lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews. Plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.